Okay, we begin here on the bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Bet, the quote from the Mishnah, which is, V'lo shel nashim le'olam yipnei kavod, that we don't take the bed, the bier of the woman, out into the public domain because of kavod. Now we saw before that yipnei kavod might relate to some of the things that were mentioned in yesterday's daf, which is the problem of a nida, which is that there are certain things that we don't want to make public issues about, and we try to keep them quiet so it doesn't embarrass anybody. So also here, Amri Naradai, Loshanu Elechaya. It's only true of a woman who passed away during either, whether it's childbirth or certainly afterwards, Aval Shar Nashim Manichim. But other women we do take out. So here, the Gemara, according to the Naradai, says that the qualification of the Mishnah about not taking women out is women who are going to be bleeding, are going to have other issues, which is going to make it unpleasant both for them, embarrassing for others, to take them outside. And it would be inappropriate, again, to place them outside. We're not talking about a coffin, again. We're talking about an open bed. If someone who's in a shroud, then if they died in childbirth, that's going to be very messy, and it's not going to be something that you want to take out into the public sphere. Whereas Rabbi Elazar Amar, Afilu Shar Nashim, even other women, that is the case. I mean, this is an inyan of tzniut, he says, which is that the woman doesn't go into the public sphere, doesn't belong out in that public venue. Dichtei, v'tamat sham Miriam, v'tikaver sham. So that says that Miriam passed away and was buried there. Samuch l'mitach gura. There you have them juxtaposed, which is she passed away, and then she's buried. So immediately after she died, she's buried. There's no funeral procession or big eulogies that are made in between. V'amar Rabbi Elazar, Af Miriam ben Ishika Meita. Miriam was also zocha to die by the kiss of death, by the kiss of God, which is also what Moshe and Aaron were zocha to. Ad yesham sham mi Moshe. They learned that gzeira sheva from Moshe. So now, upinei ma lo nemar ba. So then why is it explicit by Miriam that she died by the Alpi Hashem? Alpi Hashem, upinei shignai hadavar lo umro. Because it's not a nice thing to say. That's the way that God kissed a woman. Because of this idea of Pi Hashem, so it's a newer manner. It's in a more undertone that is there. It is true, it did happen, but it's not something that we write about explicitly. So just like Aaron and Moshe died al Pi Hashem, so did Miriam die al Pi Hashem. The Gemara takes that literally, not in al Pi Hashem, that Hashem commanded that they died, but al Pi Hashem literally means they by the kiss of Hashem. Same would apply to Miriam, except that we don't make a public statement about that. So this is Rabbi Elazar, again, talking about the burial of a woman that, just like Kol Kvodah Bat Melech Pnima, in her lifetime, Tzniut is a virtue, so too, at the time of death, Tzniut is also a virtue in not making it into a public affair. Amar Rabbi Yami, Lama Nismicha Mitat Miriam LePashat Para Aduma. Why is there a juxtaposition between the parasha of Miriam and the parasha of Parah Aduma? L'mar lecha, ma Parah Aduma michaperet, af mitatan shel tzadikim michaperet. Just like the Parah Aduma provides a certain amount of kapara, Rashi over here, and Tosafot quote that it's michaper on the egel, ma'aseha egel, which Rashi on the Torah brings the perushim as to how or why the egel is nitchaper yaday the parah aduma, that the mother should come and clean up the mess of the child. So just like we find that the parah aduma has an aspect of kapara to it, so too the mitat tzadikim has an aspect of kapara associated with it. Amar Rabbi Elazar, lama nismecha mitat aron, the big day kuhuna. Why is the death of Aaron juxtaposed to the big day kuhuna? In the process of Aaron's death, it says, v'afshet aron et bigadav, that he will remove his clothing, Aaron Yasif Umecham, that he will die there. So there's this process by which he disrobed when the Big Day Kuna, and then he passed away. Ma Migdei Kuna Michaprim, just like the Big Day Kuna Michaprim, we saw that in the Gemara Yuma, it's also found, I think, in Zvachim, as well, that each one of the Big Day Kuna is Michaper on a specific type of Avera. Av Mitatan Shal Tzadikim Michaperet, so too, the Mita of the Tzadikim is Michaperet. We can read it on a more simple level. The Big Day Kuna are used by the Kohanim to bring the Korbanot in the Migdash, which is Mechaper, so too, the Mitat Tzadikim Mechaper. This has implications, I mentioned them before, for instance, on Yom HaKippurim, as well as on Tisha B'Av, the reason that we read about the Asara Harugei Malchut. Why do we mention them both on Tisha B'Av and Yom HaKippurim? Because of this idea that Mitat Tzadikim is Mechaperet, that the Mitat of the Tzadikim is Mechaper, so on Yom HaKippurim, it's appropriate to speak about the mitat ha-tzadikim, especially those types of great individuals, because it's a day of kapara. And with regards to Tisha B'Av, it's also an aspect of kapara, but we also mentioned earlier that it's shakul k'churban beit ha-mikdash. It's the equivalent. The mitat ha-tzadikim is like the destruction of the mikdash. And therefore, the mitat ha-tzadikim is appropriate to be mentioned in both of those contexts, both in Tisha B'Av, as well as on Yom HaKippurim. Now, Mitat Miriam, Mitat Aron, which take place in Parshat Chukat, follow the Para Aduma. And if you look at Sefer Bamidbar is missing about 38 years of their sojourn in the Midbar. The Sefer Bamidbar talks about the sojourn of Bnei Yisrael in their first year and their second year in the Midbar. Then it talks about Adat Korach, which is not dated, and is a machlokas on Ramban Ibn Ezra as to when it took place. If it took place prior to certain things that took place in Midbar, was at a later date. So at most, you get to a couple of years into the Midbar. Next time we talk about any narrative within Sefer B'Midbar is the death of Miriam, which is in the 40th year. So there is an intervening space that is missing, which is filled in by Parah Adumah. Now the Parsha Parah Adumah does not belong in Sefer B'Midbar, it belongs in Sefer Vayikra. It uses a format that is very familiar in Sefer Vayikra, including the word Torah or Torat, which we find by all of the Korbanot, the Torah HaShlamim, the Torah HaOlah, the Torah HaChatat. Over here, you have the Torah also of the Parah Adumah, and it's a Korban or a form of Korban that should have been in the Sefer Vayikra. So why is it placed over here? The answer might be is that it's telling you what happened in the intervening years. What happened in intervening years between the second year after the Meraglim were sent and the 40th year when they're about to enter into Eretz Yisrael? What happened for those 38 years is that the people died. That the Torah Midbar dies, and so the Parah Adumah, which is all about the Tarah from Tumat HaMeit, fills in that gap of the dying in the Midbar, in that there's 38 years that are absent. We saw in my other Midrashim that Hashem was not Midyached in Moshe during that period of time, and it's a period of time that involves a certain amount of Hester Panim, or it's not as easy a relationship for Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's written in a way, Sefer B'Midbar, as if it's a straight-through narrative flow, but there are 38 years missing, and again, Parah Adumah sits there. Miriam, when we get to the death of Miriam, that is right after Parah Adumah. That's the first thing we get mentioned in the 40th year, is the death of Miriam, and that begins the narrative that deals with the 40th year. And then right after that, you have Mei Merivah, which led us to the other drasha that we saw in the Gemara, that Shlosh Matanot Tovot Hashem gave to Bnei Yisrael, and Mizchut Miriam was the Be'er, and that's why they, right after Miriam's death, they complain about the loss of water, that they're complaining that there's no water because Miriam, the Be'er Miriam, disappeared. Right now, the Gemara talks about death in general, the duration of death. Tanur Banan, Meit Pito'om, someone who dies suddenly, Zohi Mita Chatufa, that is a type of death which is a person like snatched away, grabbed away. Achtof means to steal or to snatch away from somebody. So this person was snatched away. Chala yom echad, the person falls ill for a day, umeit, and then dies. Zoe mita d'chufa. That is a mita, that person's being hustled or rushed into the death. He only has one day. Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel omer, zoe mita magefa. That is a death from pestilence, from a plague of some sort. Shnemar ben Adam, we're familiar with this perek because this is the perek in Yechezkel where we learn out all the dini avelut from. Well, the story starts with Hashem telling Yechezkel, I'm going to take Machmad Einecha. I'm going to take the delight of your eyes away from you, which is his wife. I'm going to take from you, and then you're not going to act like an Avel. That's the background to the story of how we learn out the Dini Avelut. So it says, Shenemar ben Adam, hinini lokeach mimcha et Machmad Einecha b'magefa. I'm going to take the delight of your eyes, your wife, in a magefa, in a pestilence. Uchtiv. And then it says later on, Tupsukim later, Vadaber la'am b'boker. I told the people in the morning, and my wife passed away that evening. So you see that there was a delay of a day between the time that he was informed of it and the time that she fell ill and then she passed away. So you see that's all. That's called the mita magefa. Shnei yomim, if a person tarries for 2 days, umeit, zuhi mita duchuya. That is a mita that has been passed off, pushed off a little bit. He's gotten a certain amount of reprieve. Gimel, 3 days, is Ge'ara. That's a death of reproof of some sort. Arba'ah, 4 days, is Nizifa. It's if you're being snubbed a little bit. Chamisha, Zui Mitat Kol Adam. 5 days is a normal duration where a person will fall ill and then pass away. Tosafot already on the spot says he doesn't know what the difference is between all these different statements, you know, fast, snatched, what does all this mean? But what we see here is that the standard is 5 days. Assuming that 5 days is enough time for a person to organize their things, get their last will and testament together, gives a person a certain amount of time. We've seen that before, that's the bracha. It used to be that people would sneeze and pass away. And the bracha that was granted, that Yaakov asked, was that people should fall ill before they pass away, so they should have warning that they are going to pass away, and it won't happen suddenly. Obviously, it's not always true, but the idea that a person will weaken and then fall ill and then pass away gives a person time, and as well as the relatives time, to deal with the fact that the person might pass away. Now, how do we know that 5 days is the standard for the death? Amar Chanan and Maikra, what's the pasuk? It says, by Moshe Rabbeinu, Hein karbu yamecha lamut. Your days have come close where you're going to pass away. Hein, chad. Hein means one. Karbu is trey, plural. It means two. Yamecha is 2 days. Trey, hachamisha. You add them together, they are five. Hein, chad. How do I know that hein is one? Shekem lashon yivani, gorim leachat, hein. In Greek, the word hein means one or one. It sounds very similar, and that's the word. So therefore, they get 5 days from this. Tosafot already points out that's lav dafka, because Moshe never falls ill. Moshe doesn't fall ill for 5 days and then pass away. We have that based on the Midrash, which Tosafot quotes over here, which is that on the last day of Moshe's life, it says, upasak hampsiot bevat achat. He's able to bound up the mountain and down the mountain as if he was a young man. There's no sign of any weakness in Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, the last pasuk, right, in the Torah, that Moshe lo naslecho, right, that nothing went bad. He was in full health and full spirit when he passed away, full vigor. It's actually a Musar Haskel. We always read these parshiot right around Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim. And it says that Moshe Rabbeinu was in completely good health, and yet he dies. So what's the Musar from this? Is why did he have to die? If he was of good health and everything was fine, why did he die? Because Hashem said so. And that's the idea of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. The Yom HaDin is Hashem determines what's going to happen in the following year. You could be in great health. You can have everything going fine. But when Hashem says, that's it. So that's the idea of Yom HaDin. That's the Musar Haskel that comes from this idea of Moshe Rabbeinu being in full health and saying, tomorrow I'm going to die, or I'm going to die now because Hashem said, I'm going to die. And that's it. My time is up. Now, even though we don't learn from Moshe Rabbeinu because he didn't fall ill, nevertheless, we get the general sense from Moshe Rabbeinu that it's appropriate to have 5 days notice, or that's the normal duration in which a person would die. And therefore, when you have a certain amount of days here that are less than that, the Gemara describes them as being accelerated or somewhat slowed down, but none of them being exactly the normal way. And that's why the Gemara gave all different terms to them. Then the Gemara says, Meit v'chamishim sana, zui mitat karet. Dying at 50, that is the mita of karet. Chamishim u'shtayim sana, zui mitato shel Shmuel Aramati. Dying at 52, that is the death of Shmuel. Shmuel dies at the age of 52. Shishim, dying at 60, zui mita b'dei shamayim. That's death at the hands of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, mita b'dei shamayim. Amar Mazutra Maikra. Where do you know this from, that 60 is mita b'dei shamayim? Dichtiv, because the pasuk in Yob says, Tavo b'chelach elei kover. You will come with a full harvest to the grave. So what does it mean with a full harvest? B'chelach gematria shitin havu. So kelach in gematria is 60. So that teacher, what does it mean a full harvest? You come with a full 60 years to the grave. So once you reach 60, you pass point the point of mita b'dei shamayim. You've lived a full life. You get that from Bet and Chaf is 10, and then Kaf and Lamed is 50, so that's 60 years. Shivim, Seva. Shivim is reaching a nice age, an age of a relaxed elderliness. Shmonim, Gvurot, reaching 80, that's already, you know, special, it's a strong life. Dichtiv, and now we have a pasuk in Tehillim 4. Yimei Shnotenu Behem Shivim Shana, Vim Gvurot Shmonim Shana. The lifetime or the duration of a person's life is 70 years. And if they're lucky, if they're really strong, they make it to 80 years. Okay, that's the layout here. You have the ages 50, 60, 70, 80. We know the Mishnah and Avot also lays out the different ages by years. But that was the statement so far, or this description that the Gemara brought. Now, we're going to have Rabbah disagree. And Rabbah says, "Mechamishim v'ashishim shana zu mitat karet." From 50 until 60, that is a mito of karet. Now, v'hai d'lo chashiv l'hu. So then why didn't the Braita mention it? The Braita says 50 is karet. It doesn't say 50 until 60 is karet. It makes it sound like only 50 is karet, or 50 and less might be karet, but above 50 to 60 doesn't sound like it is a problem of karet. So the answer is, Mishum Fodo Shel Shmuel Aramati. Because the covenant of Shmuel, Shmuel passed away between 50 and 60 at 52, which would have been questionable then. Wait, did he die in Mita of karet? So they didn't want to mention 50 to 60 as being karet, because then it would cast aspersions on Shmuel Aramati. And that's why before the Braita mentioned Shmuel Aramati, that 52 is the death of Shmuel Aramati, which actually hints at the fact that there is actually 50 to 60 might be an issue, and that's why Shmuel Aramati's age is mentioned. Rabbi Yosef, you have a bar shittin, when he reached 60, avalu yamotova, the rabbonon. He made a party when he reached his 60th birthday. Amar nafkali mikoret. I've now left the place of karet. So Amar le Abaye, Abaye was a Talmud of Yosef, says, nina, nafkali mar mikoret deshane. Maybe you got out of karet of years, I mean that in terms of your years, your duration of years, you got out of it. Mikoret deyome minofik mar. You didn't necessarily get out of the karet of days. So the difference between a karet of shanim, which means that you cut off, you less years, mean that they're taken away, and karet diomi, Rashi says over here, shema yamut mitach hatufa, who says that you're not going to be suddenly plucked or die very suddenly. So that would be a mita of karet of yome, that you're not given the 5-day duration in order to pass away in the normal manner, but you're suddenly taken away. So that's a form of karet. So he says, I'm late, nakali, nakid lacha, miho palga biyadacha. I said, at least I have half. I mean, it's still worth a party because I got through the karet of shanim. So it's worth a party for that at the age of 60. So what's interesting here is this idea of having a party at ages. Different rishonim achronim discuss about making a party, whether it's at 60, 70, 80, meaning that these are significant years, as you see from the Gemara over here, 60 from passing the years of karet, 70, which is a full lifespan according to the Gemara, 80 is already growth. Some of them even talk, I think the Chatam Sofer talks about making a Shechianu, possibly when one reaches the age of 70, because that one has lived a full life, now they're entering in, he says, don't make it a shame of Malchut. But these ideas that these are significant milestones within the individual's life, and therefore it would be appropriate to celebrate these times, 60, 70, 80. It might also indicate that there's some value in celebrating a birthday, because there is meaning to the age of the individual. That really has differing opinions. Some say that it's chukot akum to celebrate one's birthday. Others suggest, based on this Gemara, that there is a value, or maybe only at certain milestones there's a value. We do know that if one does celebrate their birthday, they have to do it in the right way, which is that it shouldn't become a celebration of holulut. It shouldn't just become a big party and a drunken mess. That one celebrates their birthday, they should do it in a way which is significant, which is like getting an aliyah, learning more Torah, doing something that is a mitzvah, significant on that day, to make sure that the birthday is celebrated in the proper manner. Right, so that's it as far as these are concerned. Now, here you have the list out of the years, which is interesting, because here you have Abaye and Rav Yosef. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah discusses the fact that Abaye and Rabba, or Abaye and Rova, it's not clear there from the Gemara, there's a machloket about the gear, so whether it should be Rabba or Rova, probably most likely it should be Rabba. Abaye and Rabba were from Beit Eli, and therefore they were subject to the curse of Beit Eli, that they would die early. And therefore, Rabba died at the age of 40, and Abaye died at the age of 60. So it's interesting over here that Abaye is talking to Rav Yosef about celebrating his 60th birthday, when Abaye himself is going to pass away on his 60th birthday because of the curse of Beit Eli. Of course, he didn't know that at the time, but it's just somewhat ironic that he's having this discussion with Rav Yosef. Rav Huna dach nafshei pitom. Rav Huna suddenly died. Havakad daigi rabbonon. The rabbonon were worried that the fact that he died suddenly was cast aspersions on his death. They had questions about his death. So tanalahu zuga demedayev. So there was a zuga min derabbonon that came from a daiv, and they said lo shanu elo shlo yigia legvurot, that this problem of dying suddenly is only a problem if you haven't crossed over 80. Alagia legvurot zohi mitat neshika. Once you've crossed over 80 and you've lived a full life, then dying suddenly is actually a brocha instead of being a negative. So prior to the age of 80, that sudden death is something where we look at it as being like almost like karet diyome, like cutting off your days. Once you've crossed over 80, they say then dying suddenly is actually a brocha. It's the mito of nishika. The assumption being that once a person reaches 80, that they will pass away and they get their estate in order, they put everything in order, because they know that after 80, that there's a certain limitation to how much they're going to live anyway. So that again will answer also about Moshe Rabbeinu, why that wasn't an issue that he died suddenly. Again, there he was also they were warned ahead that he was going to die. But even the fact that he died without getting sick is after the age of 80. So that is Mita Nishika. Amar Rava. And Rava here makes a statement, which is a difficult statement. We will deal with it a little bit. The main sugya is in Kuf Nun Vav in Shabbat, where we already spoke about the sugya more in depth. Amar Rava. Chaye, Bane, Umezone. It once lifespan, chaye, seems to be lifespan or duration. It also could mean one's health, how one's life will be conducted. Bane, the children, your assumption means how many children, I assume, or maybe it even means what will happen to those children and what they will do in their lives. Right, I'm saying maybe even how many or whether you will have children or not. Mizone seems to be referring to parnosa of the individual. Lo bizchuta tal yomilta. It has nothing to do with the merit of the individual. El b'mazla tal yomilta. It has to do with the constellation under which one is born. Mazel will dictate these things. Daha. And now the Gemara brings an example. The example is interesting. Again, I'll come back and discuss the statement of Rabba. Daha. Rabba v'rabchista tarvayu rabbonan tzadike havu. They were both tremendous tzadikim. Meaning that the Gemara here equates Rabba and Rabchista and says that they were peers in terms of their tzidkut. How do they know that? Mar matzle v'ate mitra. One of them would daven, and sure enough, the rain would come. Or mar matzle v'ate mitra. So here we know for sure that they were tzadikim of equal level, because they're both able to beseech Hashem, and it started to rain. So here you have Rabba and Rabchista of equal level. Yet, Rabchista chaya tishin v'tartin shnin. Rabchista lives 92 years. I mean, he lives into a ripe old age. Rabba chaya arba'in. Rabba only lives 40 years. So that's what I mentioned before. This is the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that speaks about Abayin Rabba. That there, again, the girsa, whether it's Rabba or Rabba, here it makes it sound like it's Rabba. This is one of the proofs that the Rishonim bring, that the girsa there should be Rabba, which is that Abayin Rabba lived a shortened lifespan because they were from Beit Eli, and he dies at the age of 40. So you see here that life duration, life span, is not really in your own hands. Here, Rabba, who's a big tzaddik, yet nevertheless, he died at the age of 40. Bei Rav Chista, shittin hilule. In the house of Rav Chista, they had 60, call them hilule, or weddings. So there were parties. The number 60, many times in the Gemara, is used as an exaggerative form. Tosafot mentions it here as well. But there was plenty of simcha, plenty of celebration in the house of Rav Chista. Bei Rabba, in the house of Rabba, shittin tichle. There were 60. Now, tichle comes from the word shachlul, right, which is shakol shakalti, is to be left without children. Whether that means that there were premature deaths, children passed away, asonot, tragedies that took place. I mean, just the opposite. Again, the number 60 being something that might be an exaggeration of sort. Bei Rav Chista, smida the kalbe. In the house of Rav Chista, the wealth and the food was so plentiful that even the dogs got fine flour. Below midbay, and they never had to ask for it. It was always plentiful. It was always available. Bei Rabba, Nehema desare leinshe. People were eating barley bread. That's how poor they were, that they were eating barley bread. Below nishtakach. And even the fact that they were eating barley bread, there still wasn't even that much bread around. They couldn't find much to eat. This is very interesting because we had a story, if you remember, in the Gemara Megillah. Gemara Megillah and Daf Zayin Amud Bet tells a story about Abaye. That Abaye went to visit, and he went to this house where they served him all these delicacies. And he just kept eating and eating and eating. And he says by the time he finished, he would have eaten the plate as well. So then Abaye says about himself that he says that the people that are poor and are starving, they never know really how hungry they are. They don't really understand the nature of their hunger. Right before that, he says that whenever I left the house of Mar, whenever I left the house of my master, I always felt satisfied. Abaye and Rava were brought up by Rabba. Rabba was the adoptive father of Abaye and Rabba. It's very interesting, by the way, because here we just heard about Rabba. Rabba is poor. He is in tremendous poverty. And yet he still takes in Abaye and Rabba, and he takes care of them. Abaye describes being extremely poor and hungry. Where did he grow up? He grew up in the house of Rabba. And that's what he says. Whenever I left the house of Mar, I always felt like I was satisfied because I ate whatever little we had, and then I was fine. Then all of a sudden I got to this other place where they were serving all this food and I just kept eating and eating. I never realized how hungry I was. I never realized the pangs of hunger, what they really were, and how much I could really eat if I had the opportunity to eat. So again, the Gemara Megillah Zayin Amud Bet describes exactly what is being described here about the house of Rabba, that in terms of their being poor. So now you have these description of Rabbah and Rav Chisda, a compare and contrast between them. They're both tzaddikim, yet their lives go in totally different directions. So you can't claim it's b'schuta tal yamilta. How could it be b'schut? B'schut wasn't the issue here. It's clear that Rabbah had just as much schut, and yet these were the difficulties that he faced. This Gemara and the statement of Rabbah presents a problem, because the Gemara in Shabbat, and this is where most of the Rishonim deal with it, in Shabbat Kufnun Vav, says, ain mazel l'Yisrael. There is no mazel for Yisrael. And over here, Rabbah says that there clearly is mazel l'Yisrael. Tosafot tries to reconcile. It's interesting here. There's a Tosafot here and a Tosafot in the Gemara in Shabbat. Tosafot over here says, and I'll just read it to you, and then you'll see there's a nuance difference. Tosafot over here says, ain mazel l'Yisrael. Ve'esh lamar, de'lefamim mishtaneh ayidei mazal. And sometimes it's changed by the mazel. And he quotes, upamim shein mishtaneh. And then sometimes it doesn't change. And he quotes the story from the Gemara in Tanit by Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, who said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we had no parnosa. And he says, can you do something about me having parnosa? Shem said, I could restart the world from the beginning, and maybe you would have parnosa. I mean, that it's still dependent on mazel. It's not all dependent on zchuyot. So sometimes you can't undo it. So what Tosafot over here says is, sometimes the mazel impacts. I read you the Tosafot in the Gemara in Shabbat and Kufnun and Vav and Aleph. There, Tosafot says something that's slightly different, but it's nuanced. That's what he says. Rava. There it's talking about in Mazel Yisrael. He quotes Rava from over here. The Shili Moed Katan. Bnei Chaye Muzone. La B'schuta Talya Milta. They don't have to do with schut. Ela B'mazla Talya Milta. Mikol Makom Ayde Schut Gadol Mishtaneh. Through a great merit, you can change it. Aval Pamim Sheina Mazal Mishtaneh. But sometimes you can't change it. The way that the Tosafot is phrased in Shabbat, the default is that you're guided by mazel. That whatever's going to happen to you has to do with mazel. If you have a tremendous merit, a tremendous zechut, you can undo that. You can remove the problem of mazel. That's the way Tosafot in Shabbat describes it. Tosafot over here describes it the other way, which is that you're really determined by zechuyot, but sometimes the mazel overrides. So it's a question of default. The Tosafot, it's also the context of the Gemara, it's interesting. Tosafot in Shabbat says the default is that mazel is there, and b'schut, with zechuyot, you can undermine it, or override it. Over here, he says that the default is zechuyot, but sometimes mazel is so strong that it overrides and you can't do anything about it. That's the way Tosafot deals with it. Other Rishonim deal with it in different ways, the most interesting of which is the Me'iri. The Me'iri there in the Gemara in Shabbat says something that's amazing, in quoting this statement of Rava, so that's why I'm going to quote it, because it's the Me'iri so interesting. Again, if you look up, I have the Makorah back there on Daf Kuf Nun Vav in Shabbat about this reconciling between in Mazel Yisrael and whether there is Mazel or no Mazel. But the Me'iri says, he quotes, he says, people quote this Gemara over here, which is the Mazel Yisrael based on what Rava says. He says, Ba'al Tabit La Mamar Homer. Don't look at the Mamar that says, Yesh Mazel Yisrael. Shepamim hayu ktsat chachamim nivuchim. Nivuchim, that they were depressed, despondent, or confused. Birotam he'eder hasidur bofenei onesh v'gmul b'bnei adam. They couldn't see punishment and reward properly. Kamamar, like the mamar, ha'omer, the one in here in our Gemara, omer, chaye bonei umzone labzchutu tal milta, el b'mazel tal yamilta. V'sofer b'mkomo shalohi viu lomar kein el mashra'a. And I'm going to tell you now that the reason he said this is because what he saw. Lemi shayat tzaddik v'chacham v'chasid v'reu kasheh. And he saw that he was all these things, and things were different. Yom ubilti matzliach be'ilu anyanim. And he wasn't successful. So then he thought, okay, how do I reconcile the fact that this is a tzaddik and he's not successful? Is by the fact that I say, oh, it's all up to mazel. The Me'iri says that's a wrong assumption. It's completely wrong. Anybody who says that is erroneous. And they were misled. I mean that these chachamim were guided or misled. They made a mistake because they saw basically tzaddik v'ralo. And they didn't know how to deal with it. So how do they deal with tzaddik v'ralo? They said, oh, it's up to mazel. But he says that's wrong. That's absolutely incorrect. They were misled and mistaken in their assumption. So don't let them mislead you with a statement like that. And basically he says that the statement here of Rava is a mistake. That he's wrong. And he says, "Aval marmar kli shein mazel Yisrael." What you got to know is there is no mazel Yisrael. So marmar sheimunat agmul va'onesh yachrit hakol. Everything is determined by punishment and reward. Always determined by zkuyot. So the Me'iri has a pretty strong statement about what Rava says over here, and he says that it's a complete mistake. it is incorrect what he says over here, and Rabba was misguided or misled by exactly the example that we bring afterwards, which was Rabba and Rav Chista. The Rabba had a difficult life, so it must be that there is mazel. And the Rabbi says that's not the case. Everything's taloi v'schut. Okay, maybe we don't understand, maybe we don't fully comprehend what happened with Rabba, but that doesn't mean that there's not zchut and onish. Same is true with regards to what's said in the Torah. In the Torah, it tells us that if you do this, things will be good for you. Do this, things will be bad for you. Makes it pretty clear in the Torah that it has nothing to do with mazel. In terms of success and especially monetary and wealth, it seems to indicate in the Torah, it's all dependent on your zchuyot. So the Ramban on the Torah over there discusses the fact that that's true of Klal Yisrael as a whole. In that, if you look at the nation as a whole, then the zchuyot will determine the success of the nation and the onesh of the nation. Each individual in the nation, you can't say that it'll be definitely tied to zchut and onesh in terms of their exact situation or circumstance. You have to look at it on a more broad, holistic view of Klal Yisrael rather than simply at on the micro level of each individual person that is there. Even though the Ramban himself says that with regards to individuals also, that schar and onesh is a very big part of it, obviously there are things that impact as well. I mean, that schar and onesh, we don't understand always what the schar and onesh is, so sometimes we can't clearly understand with the individual. But he says what the Torah says will always come true at a national level. All right, so that's an interesting discussion here in terms of whether there's mazel Yisrael or ain't mazel Yisrael. Again, it's more extensively discussed in Kut Nun Vav in the Gemara in Shabbat. Rama Rava, Hani Tlat Milei Baikame Shemayo, I have requested these three things. I dam to Hashem and I requested these three things. Tarte Yavuli, they gave me two of them. Chadalo Yavuli, one of them they did not grant me. Chukmatei de Rav Huna, v'utre de Rav Chista. I wished for the tremendous wisdom of Rav Huna and the wealth of Rav Chista, v'yavuli, and I was granted that. So this is very interesting because Rava again was one of the adopted children of Rabba, and he grew up in abject poverty with Rabba. And yet after he requested, he became as wealthy as Rav Chista, and therefore he reaches a point where he's very wealthy. He was also in the city that he was the Rav, in Mechuza, it was also an extremely wealthy city. So it's interesting that Rava became, who eventually became wealthy, became the Rav of an extremely wealthy city. Anvantunute de Rabba bar Rav Huna, I also asked for the humility of Rabba Rav Huna, v'lo yavuli, and they didn't grant it to me. So it's an interesting statement of Rava over here, because Rava is the one before who said that all these things are dependent on mazel. So one of the things he mentioned was mizone. Yet here he davens, and he's able to get mizonot, like Rav Chista. So is this a counter to what he said before? Or is this like the Bali Atosvot suggests, that if you have a great schut, then you're able to override the mazel? It's like the statement of Rava here somewhat undermines his previous statement that was before, but he wasn't able to be granted the anava of Rabba bar Rav Huna. Rav Se'orim, so there was this Rav Se'orim, or whether it was with a samach or a sin, it's not clear here. Achua de Rava, the brother of Rava, which is interesting, we don't hear very much about the brother of Rava. Here it says that he had a brother. V'yotav kamei de Rava. He was in front of Rava, he was with Rava in company. Chazia de Hava kamenamnim. Now menamnim usually means to doze off. Over here it means that he was dying. In that he was a goses. He was on his deathbed and he saw that he was leaving. Amalei leimel leimar delo letzaron. So Rava says to his brother, please daven for me so that the malacham of it doesn't cause me any pain. Amalei mar lav shishbuneyu. You, Rava, are much greater than me. Aren't you like the best friend of the malacham of it? You can do whatever you want. You can dictate whatever you want to the malacham of it. Why are you asking me to do it when you have that power over the malacham of it? Amalei kaven de imtzar mazla lo ashkach bi. Since I'm on my deathbed and I'm weakening, it's clear that he has the upper hand today, the malacham of it. And once that happens, I don't have the ability to override anymore. I mean, I've lost my powers. I'm at the end of my life. I've lost my powers. So Amalei litchazed limar. So his brother says to him, please appear to me in a dream and tell me what your experience was. It's not clear here whether he actually did daven for his brother or not. But he says to me, please come back and appear to me in a dream. He appears to him in a dream. Amalei, havalei lamar, tzaro. So he says, his brother, Rav Zorim, says to Rabba, did you have any pain in your death? Amalei, kirivda de kuslita. It was like the pinch or the puncture of a blood letter. So it was a very small ping, prick, and that was it. Nothing big, no big deal at all. That's what Rabba says. Rav Avayotim Kamei de Rav Nachman. A similar story, but obviously took place earlier, because there was Rava passing away. Here it's Rava in front of Rav Nachman. Chazia de Kamenamne. He saw that Rav Nachman was passing away, that he was losing consciousness. Rav Nachman makes the same request of Rava that Rava made of his brother. Please pray that the Malcham of it won't hurt me, it won't be painful. Rava responds to him, Rav Nachman, you're my Rebbe, you're like a big gun. Why can't you do something to take care of it? You should daven, not me. Man choshev, man sofin, man rikia or rikua. It's not clear. Man choshev, who is important? Man sofin, mi nichbad, who is honored, who has stature? Man rikia or rikua means mimi tukan, who is tukan on the day of death. Meaning on the day of death, when one person is dying, all of these things the person loses. And they're no longer relevant, and therefore, just because I'm an Adam Choshev, it's not going to give me any ability now to daven or control the Malacham of it. So Rava makes the request of Rav Nachman, which his brother will later make of him, but she has appeared to me in a dream. So Itchazile appeared to him in a dream. So Rava queries Rav Nachman and says, did you have any pain in your death? So he says, it's like pulling a hair out of fat. Very smooth. Very easy and smooth. It wasn't anything bad. But, he says, but if God tells me to go back to this world, meaning that back to Olam HaZeh, Karabait, where you were before, Lo Be'inan, I would never go, the Nafish Be'utute, because the fear of the Malacham of it is so great that I wouldn't want to do it. Meaning that the fear at that moment of death is so palpable and is so scary, even though in the end the death was a smooth thing, nevertheless, that fear is enough to not want to come back there again, to redo this, or to have to experience it again. No, thank you. I do not want to do this again. But Belozar was eating truma, and the Malach Mavit said, time to go. He showed up at his door, it says time to go, but he's in the middle of eating truma. I'm like, hey, truma kachilno, v'lam kodesh, yikre. I'm eating truma, that's kodesh. It's inappropriate that you would take me at a time that I'm osig be kodeshim. So chalfele shaton, he gave him a little break, he gave him a little respite, and he came back when he finished eating the truma, so he postponed taking him. Rav Sheshet, itchazile b'shuka. Rav Sheshet, he showed up to take him from the shuk in the middle of the marketplace. I'm like, b'shuka k'behema? He says, what, are you going to take my life here in the middle of the shuk like an animal that's killed in the shuk, you know, in the butcher's area? Say, ita the gabi bait, wait for me at home. Wait for me at home, we'll take care of this. We'll take care of business when we get home. That's why Rav Sheshet went home, and he passed away when he went home. Rav Ashi itchazile b'shuka, same thing happened to Rav Ashi, appears to him in the public market. Amalei itrachli tlatin yomen. Because give me a respite for 30 days. I want an extra 30 days. Bahadre l'talmudai. I want to review all my learning. Damrito, because they say, that's the story in the Gemara in Psachim, the daf before Malkum Shnago, about one of the Amoraim's children passed away, and he was teetering on life and death, and he passed away, and then he came back. And they ask him what he saw, and he says, Olam hafuch ra'ita, I saw an upside down world, and he describes there. One of the things he says is, Ashrei mi shebalekan v'talmudo biyodo. Praise is the one who comes, or lucky is the one who comes here, and he has his learning in his hand. So that's what Rav Ashi requests a reprieve for 30 days, in order that he can review his learning, so he'll come there with talmudo biyodo. V'yom t'latinata. Sure enough, the Malcham of it shows up on the 30th day, like he had agreed. Samarlei, maikulei hai. What's the rush? Why are you back here so fast for it? I mean, all right, 30 days, give me a little more. What's the big deal? It says, Kagdachakar ragle de barnoton. Because you are pushing off the, basically, nisiyut of Rav Huna Barnaton. Rav Huna Barnaton is supposed to take over the nisiyut from you. And as long as you're alive, he's not going to get it. And we have a principle, we've seen this again before, Ein malchut nogad bechaverta afidu kumlo neima. That even as a hair's breadth, one malchut cannot touch another malchut, meaning that he can't become the nasi until you're gone. And he has a certain amount of time that he's allotted, and we have to grant that time, and if you keep pushing it off, we're going to have to shorten his malchut and extend your malchut. That doesn't work that way, so your time has come. Rav Chista lo ava yochile. Rav Chista, the Malach HaMavit, could not get the better of him. Why? To lo ava shatek pumei migirsa. He never stopped learning. As long as he was learning, the Malach HaMavit couldn't get him. Salek yoti ba'arza. He went ahead and he sat, whether it's under a cedar tree or on a cedar tree, the Bei Rav, outside the Beit Midrash, and he was reviewing his learning. Paka Arzo. The cedar broke, or whether a branch of the cedar broke, something happened where the cedar fell and distracted him, the Shotok, and he was silent for a second, and Yochilei. And he was able to get the better of him and kill him. Similar story brought about David HaMelech in Bamei Madligim in the Gemara in Shabbat, with regards to the fact that the Malach HaMavit couldn't get the better of him, and then he blew a wind, and it rustled in leaves, and he stopped learning for a second, and then he got him. B'chia lo v'matzi l'mir kavalei. The Malach HaMavit couldn't even get close to Rabbi Chia. mean, that wasn't even like a close call. He couldn't get to him. He was out of luck. And here, he couldn't do anything. So chad, yom achad, idmi lei kanya. One day, the Malchum Avi appears to him like an ani. Ata tarif abava, he knocks on the door. Bring me out a loaf of bread. Apikule, Reb Chiya did that. He went ahead and took care of the poor person. He brought him out bread. Amalei, velav kamarachem mar anya. Don't you have rachmanot? You had mercy on the poor person. Au gavra, my lo kamarachem. Why don't you have mercy on me? The Malchum Avi says, basically, you have mercy on the poor person, yet you don't have mercy on me. I'm doing my job, and you're not giving me the ability to do my job. So amai lo kamarachem mar, why don't you have any rachmanot on me? So Galilei, he revealed himself to him. He turned from an ani into the Malchum Avi. Achmilei shuta denura. He showed him his staff of fire. And amsilei nafshei. Rabbi Chiya gave over his life to him. And he said he realized that the time had come, that Hashem had said it. So he said, fine. Now whether that was because what he showed him and he was so scared that he said, okay, I'm ready to go. Or whether he realized that he's trying so hard and it's his time and he's got to go. So he gave over himself to the Malchum Avi. Right? Just remember these little stories here. We're going to come back and discuss this at the end of today, towards the end of today's daf. And it's a contrast. And that contrast will be important. We can discuss it when we get there. Now the next Mishnah begins. This is the final Mishnah in Masechet Moed Katan, which is Nashim B'Moed. On Cholom Moed, the women can be Me'anot of Alom Mitapchot. They can do Me'anot, which is a type of eulogizing or a type of activity that they did in order to engender the crying and the distress and the feelings, emotions about the loss here. Avalo mitapchot, they can't be mitapchot. We'll see in a second what all these items are. Bishmol Omer, ha smuchot mita mitapchot. Only those women that are directly close to the bier do that. Roshei chodeshim mechanuk upurim. When it comes to Rosh Chodesh, mechanuk upurim, mi'anot u'mitapchot. They can do both of these. So Chol HaMoed is a higher level where you can only do mi'anot, but not mitapchot. Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah Purim, which are at lower level than Chol HaMoed, there they can do Me'anot U'Metapchot, B'zeh B'zeh V'lo Mikonenot. But neither of them can you do Mikonen. You can't do this Mikonenot. So they have three things that the women do at the funeral procession. One is they do Me'anot, they do Mitapchot, and Mikonenot. Mikonenot is out of the question. Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah Purim, Chol HaMoed is out for all of those. Then Me'anot is allowed both in Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah Purim. The only one is this Mitapchot. Mitapchot by Chol HaMoed is not allowed. And by Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah Purim, it is allowed. Now, what are these things? Nikvar HaMeit. Once the mate is buried, Lo Ma'anot V'lo Mitapchot. That's the end. I mean, that the procession, the funeral procession, and all of this noise and emotion and crying, that's until the time that they're buried. Once they're buried, that's the beginning of the Nechama. You have to know that that is a transition point. The transition point is at the time of the burial. Until the burial, one cries, one stirs up the emotions, the raw feelings. Once the death comes, that's already got to be in the process of healing. We already have to reach the point of nechama. By the way, this is true by Tisha B'Av as well. Tisha B'Av, the Gemara, we saw this in the Gemara in Tanit, says that the Churban HaBayit was late on the day of the ninth. Yet we keep Tisha B'Av on the ninth. Rabbi Yochanan says, if I was alive at that time, I would have made Tisha B'Av on the 10th. So why is it that we keep Tisha B'Av on the ninth? The Gemara there says, the Rabbanan say, Tchilata de Purunata. The beginning of the Paranut is the worst thing. I think it's very similar to here, which is that there is this transition point. Until the moment of the Churban, there's still a chance that you could save it. There's still a chance that it could be reversed. There is this possibility that we should cry and make a difference. Once the Churban takes place, the activity no longer is about Avelut. It's about what do we do now? How do we rebuild? What do we do post the Churban? Accepting the reality of that which has taken place. And now dealing with that reality, facing that reality. So just like by the kvura, the burial is that moment of facing the reality and then turning from the raw emotions into the recovery stages, so too by the Churban HaBayit. The moment that the Churban begins, that is that transition point from where we stop crying and trying to save it and we say, that's it, the Avelut is over, now we have to build our lives afterwards, we have to reach the point of Nechama. Now, Ezehi Nui, this me'anot here, what is that? Shukulan onot ke'achat. That they all cry out together. They do this in unison. That's what me'anot means. Kina. What's a kina? Lamentation. She'achat medaberet v'kulan onot acharea. One of them leads and the other is response. So it's a responsive type of folk. So that's what the difference is. Mikon onot, this responsive, can never be done. Not on Chol HaMoed, not on Rosh Chodesh, not on Chanukah Purim. The me'anot can be done in all those cases. The me'anot, which is where they all cry together. Mitapchot, Tosafot says back on the previous daf, he also says in the Gemara in Tanit, mitapchot means clapping one's hands. Clapping the hands together, that's what he calls mitapchot. Rashi in one place says mitapchot is slapping the hands on the thighs. Tosafot does not like the pshat. One of his proofs is from Balak, where it says by Balak, by spoke at kapav. He clapped his hands, it sounds like. Not like he hit his hands on his thighs. Tosafot says if you explain it at Rashi, it has to be that he took both of his hands and slapped them on both of his thighs, because it's in plural there. But he says that the more likely explanation is the clapping of the hands. So the clapping of the hands is not allowed on Chol HaMoed, but is allowed on Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, and Purim. And the Gemara says, Shenamar, where do we know this from? This is from Yirmiyahu Tet, which is the Haftorah for Tisha B'Av. The Haftorah for Tisha B'Av, where it describes about saying Kinot and all the crying and the wailing, and says, V'lamedna b'notechem nehi. You should teach your daughters how to wail. And each woman, her friend, should be taught a lamentation because there's going to be tremendous destruction and death. And everybody should be taught how to be a mourner because that's really going to be the state that you're going to be in. In the future it says, and this is the line or the pasuk that is said at the end of many eulogies or at the end of many funerals, which is, Bila hamovet lenetzach, that death should be swallowed up forever. Umacha Hashem Elokim dimah mi'al kol panim, Hashem will wipe away the tears from all faces. Tosfot over here says, the reason the Mishnah brought this down is because we always want to end on a high note. We want to end the Seder Moed on a high note. Tosfot had Moed Katan as the last Masechta in Seder Moed. The Rambam and other Rishonim have Chagiga as the last Masechta, and that's what we follow. We're going to have Chagiga after Moed Katan, but it's clear from the Tosfot, you can see the Tosfot, this was the last Masechet in Moed. And he explains why there's a transition from this into Yevamot, and what's the connection between the two of them. So he clearly saw this as the end, and that's why he says they end off on a high note. It happens to be true not only of a Seder, but also in general Masechtot, they want to end off on a high note. So it would be equally as plausible that they're ending off on a high note, because it's the end of the Masechtot, not just because it's the end of Seder Moed. So now, my Amron. The next part of the Gemara is very difficult. This is the description of what the women would say in these Kinot, or in these crying, what were the phrases or things that they would say? The terms that they use are hidden in some sense. They are parables, mishalim. They are difficult to understand. Rishonim have all different types of explanations for them. The basic point of what they were doing is that they were trying to engender more crying and pain and loss, meaning that they want to make people cry and feel the pain of the loss over here. So their statements were those types of statements. Again, this is all prior to the Kvura, where that is appropriate. So here it says, one of them says, Amar Rav, Vaila Azla, Vaila Chavilo. That's what he said. I'm going to come back and explain in 1 second. It says, Amar Rav, Nishay, De Shechan Tziv. And now we're going to quote numerous items from these women of Shechan Tziv. Amran, this is what Amran Hachi, what do they say? Vaila Azla, Vaila Chavilo. So Vai means woe. La Azla means the one who's gone. Woe, the Azla for the one who has gone. Vaila Chavilo is a little harder to explain. The word chavila can be mentioned in a number of ways. One is chavila, like a package. So vai la chavila, the package has become untied or unwound. Here, with the loss here, we've lost this great package. That's one possibility. Vai la chabala, could we mean that? Chabala means a wound or damage, meaning that the loss, the pain and the wound that we have here, this open wound from the one that we've lost. Or vai la chavila, Rashi over here, or others explain, the Rabbeinu Chananel, that it's a mashkon. Mashkon means that it is a collateral. And that's vayla mashkon because we know that the nefesh, the neshama of an individual is given as a mashkon. That's what we say modani every morning, that Hashem returned us the mashkon. We give it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and He gives it back to us to hold as collateral each day. And then we give it back to Hashem at night. So vayla chavila means woe to the mashkon. That's to the nefesh and the neshama that we lost over here, that it was given back. The collateral has now been given back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amarova. Now we're going to have a number of these statements. Neshei, the nishkat naziv. Hey, people, a woman of Nashri say, Amran, gold garma mikacha v'namte mayel antiche. So again, here, it's a difficult statement. The literal words mean, gold garma, pull the bone. Mikacha or kachi would refer to, Rashi thinks it means the jawbone. As Tosafot means the molars. V'namte mayel antiche, and pour water into the kettle. So, different ways, again, of interpreting this. Some say that good garment mikacha, the teeth have fallen out of the mouth. Therefore, pour the water into the kettle. You're no longer going to need to cook anymore. You're not going to provide anything. There's no need for cooking for this individual because their teeth are lost, meaning that they're no longer going to eat. They've passed away. That's one way to view it. Another one is, good garment mikacha means take the bone out of the pot. And then, namti maya lantiche, and pour hot water into the kettle. Take the bone out of the pot means stop cooking food, because the person is no longer alive. Pour hot water into the kettles, because the hot water is going to be used to be mitahara, to cleanse the mate. So again, there's transition from life to death. Others say, good garma mikacha refers to children, that it's about someone whose children have passed away, which is good garma mikacha, take a tooth out of the mouth. We have that in the story of Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara in Brachot, that he used to keep a tooth from each of his children, 10 children that passed away. This is a memory of that child. Benamte maila antiche, and pour hot water into the kettles to wash it and cleanse it so that you can hold on to it. That's the idea here. Again, others say good garma mikacha means that the person has now lost all their teeth. Namte maila antichi, prepare water for the long journey. Antichi not being a kettle, but Antiochia, which was far away, and he has a long journey coming because he's now on the path of death. Right? All different types of interpretations that you see in the Mefarshim. You can see it here. There's the Rabbeinu Hananel. The Rashi brings some of the interpretations, and others like the Ritva bring these interpretations down. Again, all of them are to engender a feeling of sadness, emotion, meaning that there's a big loss that happened here. Rama Rova Nished Sheikh Nasiv Amran Atul Fakasu Ture the Barami Ubaravrevehu. So now, again, here, it's hard to know what it's speaking about. It says, Atufakasu Hare means you should wrap up. The mountains should wrap themselves up. The Bairami, because there is a person of high lineage. The Bairavravani is of a grand ancestry that they're talking about here. So different ways to explain it. Either Atufakasu Ture is just a mashal. The mountains should wrap themselves up, meaning that people should wrap themselves up because we just lost a great individual. That's one possibility. The other one might be literally. That the mountains should cover themselves because we don't want to see the beauty of the mountains anymore because we have a tremendous loss here. And the mashal is just like the mountain should cover up because we've lost like a mountain, a great individual. Another possibility is that these are talking about people who are being buried in Kuchin, in the catacombs in the mountains. So the mountains should wrap them up. The mountains should swallow them, should accept them for their burial. Again, different interpretations that you have here as far as this is concerned. Then, the next one is, V'amar Rava Neshed Deshech Natsiv Amre Shule Itztala Demilta Lebar Chorin Deshalimo Zvade. That you should borrow a fancy cloak, Lebar Chorin for the one who is free, Deshalimo Zvade because his provisions have run out. So again, over here, could be a mashal which says, get your takrichim ready. Because your provisions have run out, meaning your lifespan has now given up. And that's it, we're done. So time to get the clothes together. Others suggest that here a person who worked their whole life and tried to amass a fortune, and now they come to the end of their life and their provisions are out, and now they have to borrow money, or if they have to borrow something in order to be buried, tachrichim, in order to be buried. After all that they had in their whole lifetime, now they have nothing left, and they have to borrow money to have their tachrichim. Or it might refer to the people left behind, the avilim left behind. That here, this person is going to have to, even though he had all this wealth, it's all gone now. And now they're going to have to borrow to take care of the mate and to buy tachrichim for these individuals. So again, mashalim about the fate of the individual. Maybe a little bit about the sadness of a fatalistic type of view of life where one sees this as being the end of man, which is no matter how hard he works, in the end, he has nothing left, or that he has to borrow in order just to get his tachrichim after all that he went through. V'amar rova nesheid eshach natsiv amran rahit v'nafil amabro v'zufta yosef. That a person runs and falls on the bridge or on the ferry, v'zufta yosef, and then he has to borrow the fare. So here, either the idea was that a person was working the ferry his whole life, and now he comes to the time of his death, and he can't even get across the river. He has to borrow the fare to get across the river. So that could be someone who worked all of their lifetime in Olam Hazeh, and now they're going to Olam Haba, and they need to borrow to get to Olam Haba, because they have nothing, they haven't amassed anything, they haven't accumulated anything that allows them to pay the fare to go to Olam Haba. That's one way you could read it. The other way to read it is similar to the previous statement, which is a person works their whole life, and they've tried to accumulate wealth, and in the end they have nothing left, and they have to borrow to their tachrichim, to the fare, to go through their funeral procession. Again, this idea of, also mentioned in Kohelet, the idea that in the end, there's a sadness in the person can put all their mel and all their work together, in the end they have nothing left, and they have to borrow to get there. Okay, now the next one is Amar Rav Nishen Nishak Nitziv Amran. So here again, Achno Tagre Azazge Mivduku. So again here, Tagre are merchants. The Mivduku means to be checked. Azav Zage, it's not clear what that means. Some translated, and I like this explanation the best, which is that the merchants, Achno Tagre, merchants are checked at the custom houses. When you get to the custom house, when you get to the tax place, that's where they check what they have. So again, when you're talking about death, we're talking about here, person worked their whole life, the merchant, they had a whole long lifetime, then they're going to check you when you get to the customs houses, when you have to come pay taxes. I mean, when you go to Olam Haba, then they're going to check you. The other one, the Rabbeinu Chananel, which is also a beautiful pshat over here, he says, Chomar, b'makom schoratan nivdakim ne'amanim heim imlav. It's based on the Gemara in Shabbat, also in Bamei Balikim, which is the question that they ask you when you come up to Shemayim. And it says, Nasato v'natata b'emuna. Did you act honestly in your business dealings, in your business transactions? And it says here, Achno tagre azavzage mivduku, that the merchants are going to be checked by their honesty, by the way that they dealt with others. That's the way the Rabbeinu Chananel suggests over here. Again, it's a beautiful shot that is the explanation that a person has to be honest. Whatever you do in this world, that's going to be what takes you up to the world to come. Again, you can translate it similarly to the previous two that we did, which is a person works his whole life. How do you know what he accumulated? Well, only when you get to the end of his life will we know if it was worth it. He worked all these things and all these things. Once you get to the end of your life, you'll know whether it was all the work you put in was really worth it. Vamarova, Neshed Ishak Naziv Amran, another one of these parables, the last one. Moto kimoto umarin chibulaya. Their death is like a regular death. Umarin and the isurim, the bad things that happen, chibulaya, are like rebeat. So I think the best, the simplest explanation here is that death, everybody dies. Everybody has to die eventually. So death is what we call the Karen. That is the principle. The principle is going to be taken away no matter what, because in the end you have to die. We're all human beings. We have to pass away. But Marin, the Isurim that one suffers to get to that point where they die, that's rebeat. That's interest on the principle. So in a sense, Hashem lends us our bodies, lends us our Nishamot, and we have a whole lifetime. We have to return the principle. So we pay back the principle. How much interest do you have to pay on the way? That has to do with the Isurim. The types of Isurim that you go, that's the interest you pay along the way. So that's the explanation of this. Again, these are all statements of Mishalim in order to engender emotion or feelings of sadness, crying amongst those, the mourners that are there, that are accompanying the funeral procession. As we saw in the Mishnah, that's only appropriate until the time of burial. After the time of burial, that all ceases, and then we begin the process of Nechama, the process of consolation. Tanya, Ayar Rabbi Meir Omer, Tov Lalechet El Beit Evel, it's better to go to the house of the mourner than Lalechet El Beit HaMishteh, than to go to the house of the wedding or to the party. And then the pasuk ends, V'achai Yiten Alibo, that the person who's alive will take note of this. So what is it to take note of this? Dvarim Shel Mita, things of death. You have to take note of things of death, which is, De'ispad Ispidunei, those that you eulogize, then you will be, if you eulogize for others, then you will be eulogized. Dikaver yikvune. If you bury others and help to bury others, you too, in quid pro quo, will also be buried. Now, diitan itnune, that one who, if you help to lahamis, to place on or to lift up and put the burden on, so too they will help you. Diidal, that who helps to take down, idune will also be helped to take down. Now, in the simplest form, this is actually from last week's parsha, Parsha Ki Teitzei, that one has the obligation to help his friend load his animal and to unload his animal. So over here it says, you help them to load, they will help you to load. You help them to take it off, then so too, they will help you to take it off. That's in the simplest form. But the mashal here of itan itane is that the individual who helps to carry the mate, then others will carry him as well. The one who raises his voice in crying and wailing at a eulogy, others will raise their voice for him as well. That's the idea here between in the mashalim that are brought over here. So then the Gemara says, "V'ikadamrei." Some say, "Delo yidali dune." The one who does not raise himself up, idune, they will raise up for him. Dichtiv. Now, really, the truth is that it's very difficult to read this because the pasuk, you really need the pasuk beforehand, which is the pasuk beforehand says, "Al ta'adar lifnei melech." Don't make yourself glorious before the king. Ubamakom gdolim al tamod. In the place of the great ones, do not stand. Ki tov. It's much better. Amar lecha lehena. For them to say, from your lowly position, come up here. Me hashpilcha lifnei nadiv asher ra'u einecha. Than to be knocked down or pushed down from being by those princes. So if you put yourself up in a high place, then it's get knocked down. If you put yourself in a low place, right, then you have a chance of going up. So what the proof is that, the idal, if you keep yourself humble and have humility in this world, then people eat blune, people will speak about you highly and will cry heavily over you, the loss, because of the individual that's lost. So that's how they explain that idal, lo idal, eat blune. Eterna banan, kishemetu banav shel Rabbi Ishmael. When the children of Rabbi Ishmael passed away, nichnesu dalet zekenim lenachamo. Four zekenim went into bimenachemim, they're actually his rebbeim, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Lazar ben Azaria, Rabbi Akiva. So you have these four tanaim that are going in to console him to be menachemim. Amalem Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Tarfon turns to them before they go in to be menachemim and says, Du'u shechacham gadolhu. He's a great Talmud Chacham. Ubakiba Agadot. And he knows Agadot cold. He's a tremendous darshan of the Agadot. Don't, the simple interpretations don't interrupt each other. Let each one of you speak. Or it means each one of you come up with something new. Don't repeat what your friend said. Make sure that you have something different to say. I'm Rabbi Akiva, ani acharon. Akiva says, I'll be the last one to speak. Patach Rabbi Ishmael. So Rabbi Ishmael, who is the Avel, he's the one who is mourning. He was the one who opened up first. Vamar. Rabu avonotav. My sins have been great. Takfu evilav. Therefore I had back-to-back avelut. He lost two sons, back-to-back avelut. He triach rabutav. I burdened my rebbeim to come here to console me. I mean, that's why these four tanaim are here. Pam rishona vishnia. Not only once, but twice. So then, nene Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon responds. So again, it's important here that Rabbi Shmuel opens, and then only then do they respond. The avel has to open and then respond. We're going to see this in the Gemara in a second. Nene Rabbi Tarfon v'amar. V'cheichem bo beit Yisrael yivku et asreifa. This is with Nadav and Avihu. That the entire Klal Yisrael will cry for the burnt, meaning that they were killed by the fire. Valot varim kal v'chomer, isn't it a kal v'chomer? Man adav aviyu shlo asu ela mitzvah achat. Now, the Rebbe, at least according to the recording in the Torah, only did one mitzvah, dichtiv. Ve'agrivu b'nei Aaron et adam elav. They brought the dam to the Kohen Gadol, to Aaron, in order to do the avodah. That was their participation in the consecration of the Mishkan, is that they brought the stuff to Aaron. Kach banav shel Rabbi Shmuel achat kama v'kama. So if that's what they did and that's what happened to them, that all Beit Yisrael was crying for the Sreifa, then certainly your children who did much more than that, then they are great individuals and everybody has to cry for them. Meaning that he's trying to console them that his children were tremendous tzaddikim. Nene Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Now Rabbi Yossi Aglili enters. Famar. Visavdu lo kol Yisrael v'kavru oto. All Bnei Yisrael will eulogize him and they will bury him. Valo dvarim kal v'chomer. Isn't it kal v'chomer? It's a logical argument. My Avia ben Yeravam. Okay, now, Avia ben Yeravam is an interesting thing because he's a young kid. He falls very sick. Yeravam's child falls sick. Yeravam sends his wife to go to Achia Shiloni to find out what's going to happen to the Navi. He doesn't want the Navi to know. He dresses up his wife. He makes her into like a regular poor woman showing up there. Achia Shiloni gets a nevuah beforehand that his wife is coming. He sets out his messenger to her and says, hi, wife of Yeravam, meaning that we know who you are. And he gives her this nevuah. The nevuah is that this child, when you return to the city, will die. When you return to the city, he will pass away, and then he will be eulogized and buried. But he will be the last descendant of this family that will ever be buried and eulogized. The rest of this family will be murdered and wiped out and will meet a terrible death. Why? Because Yeravam didn't follow in the ways of Hashem. He was granted the right to take over from Achud Beit David, at least with part of Klal Yisrael, and yet he doesn't do the right thing. So that, because of that, all his descendants will be killed. This is this Avia ben Yeravam. Shelo asal davar chad tov. He only did one good thing, because the Pasuk says, Diktibe, Yan nimtza ba davar tov. That's the end of the Pasuk that we just read before, which is, Zaptu lo kol Yisrael v'kavru oto. Why? Yan nimtza ba davar tov, because he has this good thing about him. It's unclear from the Pasuk, what does it mean that it has this good thing about him? It's not clear what the good thing is. So then, if that's what happened to him, kach banov shel Rabbi Shmuel achat kama v'kama, then certainly the children of Rabbi Shmuel, if he just did one good thing, and this is the honor that he got, the children of Rabbi Shmuel did much more, certainly so. Now, in the middle of the story of Tanaim, you have an interjection of the Gemara of a statement of Amoraim, my davar tov. What was this good thing that happened? So Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Chinina Bar Papa, Chad Amar Shebitel Mishmarto V'Ala L'Regel, that his father had set up guards along the way to not allow Bnei Yisrael to be Ola L'Regel in Yerushalayim. He realized that if the religious capital was Yerushalayim, not only the king's capital, meaning that the capital of Yehuda is in Yerushalayim. So the king of Yehuda is sitting in Yerushalayim. If the people have to go up there for their religious practices, they're going to be like, you know, if I have to come here and this is the center of the religious center, that's probably also the center of the kingdom. And so they're going to pay homage to the kings of Yehuda. And he felt he was going to lose power. So what he did was he cut off the ability of Bnei Yisrael to go up to Yerushalayim, and he creates new places, Beit El and Dan, where he has the Agalim that he puts up and Avodah Zarah that he sets up in order that they have a religious center in the northern kingdom so they don't have to go to the religious center in the king of, or the southern kingdom, in the kingdom of Yehuda. So he put up guards to stop the people from going south down into Yehuda. Well, his son, Aviah, was one of those guards that he put there. So while he was the guard, he took off and he went down south and it was Ola L'Rego. That's one possibility. That he took away the guards that his father had set up on the way. So Bnei Yisrael wouldn't go up to the regal. That he was mevatel these guards. That's a little hard. The whole story is a little hard because Aviah seems to be a younger child. His mother takes him to the Navi to find out about him. Doesn't sound like he's very old. Yerovam is clearly still alive. So he's a prince, but I don't know how old he is. But here the Gemara attributes to him certain activities of a kid that was older, maybe a teenager, or maybe even older, where he himself went up to the regal, or he dismantled the guards that his father put up there, but it's in the lifetime of his father. So it's interesting that they say that. Now, Nene Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, now, Vamar, Bishalom tamut, o memisrifot avutecha melachim arishini, mashe yu lefenecha, ken yisrifu lach. Says, you will die in peace. And in the place of your fathers where they burnt, where they had the pyres of the kings that came before you, you too will have a pyre there and you will be buried there. This refers to Tzidkiyahu HaMelech. By the way, a little before that it says, listen, you're not going to die by the sword, but you're going to be taken away to Babel. You're going to see the king of Babylon, king of Babel eye to eye. Meaning that he's going to conquer here. You're going to be looking at him eye to eye and he's going to take you out of here. You're not going to die by the sword. But you're gone, and you're going to meet the king of Babel. This city will not survive the siege of Babel right now. That's what Yirmiyahu tells Tzidkiyahu. He only did one mitzvah. What's that mitzvah? He took Yirmiyahu out of the plaster or the mud that they had submerged him in because of what he had said, that Yerushalayim is going to be destroyed. Tzidkiyahu saves him. Tosafot over here says that's the only thing we know from the Pesukim about Tzidkiyahu, but anyway, otherwise he really was a tzaddik. It's not so clear that Tzidkiyahu was such a tzaddik, but given that, the Gemara says he only did this one good thing, and it says, what's the promise to him? If that's what happened to him, kach, what's kach? That you will go b'shalom, that you'll be buried peacefully. But now, b'shalom b'shmol, achad v'kama v'kama, your children who did much more than that, certainly they are deserving of greater honors, and they will be given much more because of what they did. Now, we'll come back and discuss it. It's not so simple. Nene Rabbi Akiva Amar. Rabbi Akiva is the last one. He said, I'm going to go last. And he says, V'yomahu yigdala mispeid b'Yerushalayim kimispad hadad rimon bebikat migidon. It's not migido, but migidon in the Pasuk. On that day, there will be great eulogy in Yerushalayim like the eulogy of hadad rimon in the valley of Megiddon. V'amar of Yosef, again here you have an Aramaic interjection to explain what Rabbi Akiva meant. We saw this already in the Gemara in Megillah, as well as in the Gemara in Sukkah, that this has to do, the pasuk is inexplainable. There is no, we don't find any Hadad Rimon in Bikat Megiddon. We don't know what the pasuk is talking about. Without the Aramaic translation of this pasuk of Yonatan ben Uziel, I would not know what it meant. Again, Rav Yosef, who fell blind in his lifetime, was no longer allowed to learn Bichtav, so therefore he learned the Targum. That's how he knew the Psukim, the Targum of the Psukim. That's why he's quoting it. Bidano Ahu, this is the translation. At that time, Yaske Mispida b'Yerushalayim. There'll be a great eulogy in Yerushalayim. Ke Mispida de Achav bar Omri, like the Mispade of Achav bar Omri, Achav the son of Omri. This is the second Achav. The Kato Yate Hadadrimon bar Tavrimon, who was killed by Aram, by Hadadrimon bar Tavrimon in the battle. Ukumispeid Yoshiyahu bar Amon, and like the eulogy of Yoshiyahu bar Amon, the Kotel Yate Paru Chagira, Paro Necho, who killed Yoshiyahu Amelach, who begat Megiddo, in the valley of Megiddo. when he goes to battle against Paro Nechol, stopping him from crossing through Eretz Yisrael to go fight Aram, when the Navi told him that he didn't ask Yirmiyo, he should have done it. It's the Kina of Yoshio that we say on Tisha B'Av. Again, Valod Varim Kal V'Chomer. Isn't it Kal V'Chomer? Ma Achav Melech Yisrael Shalo Asai L'Davar Echad Tov. He only did one thing good. I mean, Achav is a terrible king, and he only did one thing good. What is that? Tichtiv, Amelech Hayam Amad V'Merkava Nochach Haram. So if that was Kach, Banav Shal Rabbi Shmuel, Echad Kam Achav. That's what happened to him. Certainly the children of Rabbi Shmuel. What was the one good thing he did? In the battle with Aram, they target the king. They target the king and they say, we gotta get the king. Now, when they went out there, Yehoshaphat is aligned with Achav. They go out to battle. First they think Yehoshaphat is the king of Israel. And they go after him. When they realize it's not him, they turn and they set their sights on Achav. But they do not reach him. By accident, one of the archers shoots an arrow that goes between the plate mail of Achav and kills him, basically. It puts him in a fatal wound. And he says, I'm sick, pull me out of the battle, I know I'm going to die. But then he says, turn my chariot, that I should face the battle for the remainder of the day. He didn't want the troops to retreat. Once the king leaves and he's hit, all the troops retreat. He wanted them to finish the battle. So he sets himself up there, so that he is sitting there as if he is guiding the battle, so that the troops continue to fight all day. At the end of the day, the news gets out that he died, he passed away from his wounds, and they take him back and they bury him in his capital city in Shomron. And then the nevuah that was said about him comes true, that his blood is going to be washed out of the chariot into the water, and it will be licked up by the dogs and by the zonot will bathe in it. It all comes true in that sense. So that story, he did one good thing in his lifetime, and here, all of a sudden, you know, he gets this reward that he's buried in a nice way, in a nice fashion. Certainly your children will be taken care of. So anyway, that's the end of the story of the Nechama. It doesn't end like other stories. Other similar stories like this, where Rabbi Akiva goes in the end, they usually end, Nechavdanu, Rabbi Akiva, Nechavdanu. Rabbi Akiva does something different than everybody else. Over here, Rabbi Akiva gave a Nechama that was similar to all the other Nechamot that came beforehand, which is basically, you see all these people that died, and they only had one good thing about them, and yet they were treated in a certain manner. Certainly your children should be granted great honors for what they have done, the tzaddikim that they were. Amalei Rovo the Rabba Bar Mari. Tiv Bebe Tzidkiyo, it says by Tzidkiyo, B'shalom Tamut. Again, that's what we quoted before, that he's going to die in peace. Now, die in peace is not so simple. I told you over there, it's not exactly what it says. It says that you're going to be taken away, you're not going to die by the sword, but you're going to die in peace, you're going to be buried. Now, Tiv, it says also, there's a promise in the Navi in Yirmiyo, which says, V'etenei Tzidkiyo Iver, that your eyes are going to be poked out. Now, that's not all that happened over there, which is that Tzidkiyo, if that was it, maybe that wouldn't be so bad. But beforehand it says that Nebuchadnezzar, when he captured Tzidkiyo HaMelech, he takes him, he takes all his children and shechs them in front of him. Then he takes all the nobles of Yehuda and kills them in front of him. Then he blinds him. He makes him watch all of his children being killed and then blinds him. So what type of B'Shalom Tamut is that? I mean, that's not a pleasant end. So Amalei Ocham Rabbi Yochanan Shemait Nebuchadnezzar B'Yamav. His eyes are poked out, but he's kept alive and taken away to Babel. Nebuchadnezzar passes away in the lifetime of Tzidkiyo, and that's what's B'Shalom Tamut. That you will see the death of your arch enemy, the one who did all this to you, will pass away before you, die before you. Vama Robo the Rabba Bar Mari, a similar type of question. Tiv Bebi Yoshio HaMelech, it says by Yoshio HaMelech, V'chen Hinene Yosif Chala Votecha, Nesaf El Kibrotecha B'Shalom. That you will be taken to the burial of your forefathers in peace. Meaning that Yoshio HaMelech was a tremendous tzaddik. He leaves a tremendous Tshuva movement, a revolution to bring back worship of Hashem. He does unbelievable things in terms of what he did in Klal Yisrael. And so Hashem says, because of what you have done, you will be spared from being killed and you will die peacefully, but your children will have the problem. And that's what happens. Yoshio Melech's children, Yoyachin, Yoyakim, Tzidkiyahu, children, nephews, all of these are the rulers after him, and they're the ones who face all the galiyot that we talk about afterwards. But Yoshio Melech was going to die in peace. The Gemara says, is that really true? Chtiv. We learned this together in the Gemara in Tanit. Vayoru Aruim LaMelech Yoshio. The archers took aim at Yoshio Melech. They made him into a sieve. There's so many arrows hit him that he was bleeding from everywhere and he dies in the battle. We just saw this before. That there's a hesped for Yoshio Melech in the Begat Megiddo. In the Valley of Megiddo, which is when Paro Nechol kills him. And that's the Kina, both in Eicha, the parak that talks about Yoshio HaMelech, and the Kina that we say on Tisha B'Av for Yoshio HaMelech, talks about exactly this. This Gemara that talks about Yoshiyahu HaMelech made the mistake of trying to stop Paro Nechol, and he meets his death, and he's Matzdika Lava Tadin. He says, Tzadik Hashem Ki Pihu Mariti. Hashem is righteous because I violated his word. I didn't listen to the Navi. But this is not a type of nice death to me. He dies covered in arrows at a battle. So Amalei Achiyam Rabbi Yochanan Shalo Charab Beit HaMikdash Biyamav. The fact that he died peacefully is that the Mikdash wasn't destroyed. Yerushalayim is still there in his lifetime. So that is what he was spared from seeing the Churban HaBayit and the Galut in his lifetime. All right, so that goes back to what we said before. You had this Hespeid there. It's interesting, that Hespeid has two people in it. It has Achav and it has Yoshiyahu. Achav was a Rosh Gamor and Yoshiyahu HaMelech was a Tzadik Gamor. So the Hespeid, the Atid Lavo, what is the Hespeid, the Atid Lavo? Gemara in Sukkah has two opinions. One opinion is that's the Yetzer Hara, and the other opinion is that it is Mashiach ben Yosef. So that Hespeid will involve everybody. There'll be a Hespeid like the Hespeid for a full Rosha, and a Hespeid for a Tzadik Gamor, which makes it sound more like the Hespeid of the Yetzer Hara. Because the Yetzer Hara there, the Gemara in Sukkah describes how the Tzadikim and the Rishayim will come and see, and the Tzadikim will say how big the Yetzer Hara was, and then the Rishayim will say how small the Yetzer Hara was. And therefore, the eulogies here are appropriate. You have one Rosha and one Tzadik. Those eulogies together, they make up what the eulogy will be like for the Yetzirah, Latid, Lavo. Right now, the Gemara says, Remember Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Menachemim Rishayim Lomar Devar Ad Shivtach Avel. That the Menachim may not speak until the Avel speaks first. So we just saw that here. Rabbi Shmuel was opening, and then only afterwards, they answered him. So this is a practice. You have to wait for the Avel to speak, otherwise one cannot speak. Shneamar, how do I know this? It says, Achrei Kein Peatach Iyov Et Piyu. Yov opened his mouth. There's actually three parakim in a row. In Yov Gimel, this is the first pasuk which says that Yov began to speak. In the previous parak, in the end of parak Bet, his three friends get wind of what happened to him. They see him, they can't believe what he looks like. They rend their garments, they put ashes on their head, and they come sit with him for 7 days. They say nothing. Nobody speaks for 7 days. They are mourning with him. After the 7 days, that's when Yov speaks up. Yov says something, and then the subsequent parak, after Yov spoke, then you have in the subsequence, Vayana Lifaza Teimani, Eliphaz speaks. So you see that the mourner needs to speak first before the Menachamim can speak. Amrei Bo, Minayin, the Avel, Shemesev Berosh. How do you know that the Avel, when they sit in a meal together, that he sits at the head of the table, whether this is at the Sudat Habra, or when he eats, that he's at the head of the table. Shenamar, again, a Pasuk in Yov says, Evchar Darkam, I will choose their way. Ve'eshev rosh, and I will sit at the head. Ve'shkon b'kemelech b'gdud, and I will dwell like a king with his army. Kasher avelim yinachem, just like the mourners are comforted. Mary says, yinachem achrini mashma. Yinachem says like the comforters of the mourners. Like the comforters of the mourners sit, which means that they sit at the rosh, not the avel. It's the exact opposite of what you're trying to prove over here. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, yinachem iktiv. You're reading it. That's decree is Yinachem. But if you just read it without Nikudot, you could read it as Yinachem, which is Kasher Avilim Yinachem. When the Avilim are comforted. So when they are comforted, who's sitting at the Rosh? That is the Avel. The Avel sits at the head. So that's the evidence of the fact that the Avel sits at the Rosh. Marzucha Amar Mihocha. Learn it out of here. Vesar Mirzach Sruchim. That the revelry will go away from all those that have stretched themselves out. So over there, it's telling all these people have been partying and celebrating and everything like that. All that revelry is going to go by the wayside because bad is about to happen. Things are going to get really bad now. Yerushalayim is going to be destroyed. You're going to be sent out of Yerushalayim. Things are going to be really bad. So now the Gemara Darshan, that it's a play on the words here. Sar Mirzach Zruchim. Mirzach Nasisar Lisruchim. So they tell you the word sar here, which means to remove, and they say sar like a prince, so that the marzach, now says sar, becomes the prince of the sruchim. That's that it's stretched out. Rashi says sruchim is in plural, for the many that are seated there. And what is marzach? So they dash the word marzach as mar, the bitter one, zach, who is clear in his avelut. So the bitter one who's clear in his avelut becomes the prince to those that are sruchim, that are visiting him. So again, the idea that he sits at the head of the table. How do we know that the chatan, again, whether it means that they sit at the head of the table or they seated first, it's both. I mean, in their day, that meant the first thing, the one who sits first is the most honored one, that you were given to sit down first, but they also sit, quote unquote, at the head of the table, not like we have the head of the table, because their tables, when they lay down on couches, to be at the head of the table was not. To be at the middle of the table was the head of the table. So here we know that chatan is may say berosh. Nemar ki chatan yichahen pe'er ma kohen berosh. Just like the kohen is in the beginning, af chatan will be in his glory berosh. The kohen gufei menolan. How do we know the kohen goes first? The tana of the Rabbi Shmuel v'kidashto the chol davar shebikdusha. That anything that has a davar shebikdusha liftoach rishon, levarech rishon, litol maner refer rishon. Anything that has a davar shebikdusha, the kohen gets precedence. Liftoach rishon to start first, the varech rishon to make the bracha first, the tomanei yafer rishon. Machloket, Rashi and Tosfot, what these are, we'll just take them. Liptoach rishon might be within aliyah, the varech rishon might be by birkat hamazon and mizuman, and the tomanei yafer rishon, he gets to take the first dish, he gets to take that which is first. So again, there are other interpretations exactly what these are, but generally the Kohen gets precedence in all issues, religious issues, we give the Kohen the first rights. And that's what we do. We always ask the Kohen, or otherwise you have to ask the reshut of the Kohen to do something. Now, here with this, we'll finish off the final daf of the Masechta, daf Chatenu Min Aleph. Amar Rabbi Chanina, kashe yitziat neshama min aguf. The neshama leaving the guf is so difficult. Now, and it gives a parallel. Again, here's our difficulty in explaining this. Kitzipori pifi aveshet. Many different interpretations of this. Rashi over here says, it's like the rigging on the edge of the mast. That's what it is. The rigging on the edge of the mast, which there's a knot in the rope, which forces the rope to be caught at the end of the mast, and it doesn't allow it to pull out. So to get that knot, to pull it through the hole, to get it out of there, is extremely difficult. That is the way that the neshama leaves the guf. It's so painful, like taking a knot of the knotted rope through a hole which it can't fit. That's how difficult it is. Others, like the Geonim, explain it very simply. Kitzipori. It's like eating a whole bird, b'fia vesh, down, swallowing it down your esophagus. They take it really literally. It's like swallowing a whole bird down to your throat, which is very difficult for the bird to pass through one's esophagus in that manner. Either way, again, there are interpretations in between, but either way, it's very painful. It's very difficult and very painful. Rabbi Yochanan says, kibetire b'fi veshet. So if you continue along the lines of what Rashi said before, Rashi says over here, it means to tie two boats together. It's the rope that's used to tie two boats together. Again, I dive a rope that's caught. Others say it's like the topsail on the edge of the mast. Which at the topsail, again, the knotting or the holding of it there, it's knotted in such a way it won't come out easily. So it's very, very difficult to get it out. The gonim, and continuing there, is kiptire pitriot. It's like eating mushrooms, b'fia vesh, eating a whole mushroom, big mushroom down your throat, like a portobello, in one shot down your throat, which is very difficult. Now, this is very interesting, because this is in contrast to what we saw earlier in the daf today. Earlier in the daf, they say, oh, they come back, Rova and Rav Nachman, they ask you, how was it going when the Malach HaMavet came? One of them said it's like pulling a hair out of fat. One of them said it's like a little prick of the blood letter. Over here we have the neshama leaving the gulf. It's like so difficult, terrible. The pain is extreme. What is going on here? Why do we have two different explanations? The answer lies in the fact, the difference in the person's preparation for Olam Haba. This is from Rav Aryeh Kaplan. It's a beautiful way to explain it, understanding of death. I think it's found in If You Were God, a book written by Rav Aryeh Kaplan. He explains that the neshama is a ruchani, is a spiritual side of the individual. The guf is the physical side of the individual. The neshama spends its lifetime inside of the guf, in the body. The question is, the neshama, how influences it by the guf? If a person spends their whole lifetime in focused on the guf and on material side of life, then the neshama becomes accustomed to the material side and becomes very wedded to the guf, to the body. And that means when it comes time for the neshama to return to a Kodesh Baruch Hu and leave the guf, it has great difficulty doing that because the guf has become the center of that life, of that neshama. And therefore the neshama hovers over the guf. Anything that happens to the guf, when it rots, the body rots, it's a tremendous pain for the neshama. Because of the tremendous focus on the guf, therefore the neshama has a hard time leaving the guf. On the other hand, for someone who spent their whole life in spirituality and pursuits of getting closer to Hashem, then when the neshama leaves the guf, then the guf is almost like a foreign object to the neshama. The neshama reattaches to its natural habitat where it is spiritual. So for someone who is, again, a spiritual being, and someone who spent their whole life in focuses on ruchaniyut, then when the neshama leaves, it's as if a freedom from the guf. They were released from the guf. It's something that goes easy. And they depart from the guf very easily. That doesn't leave them in any pain, what happens to the guf, because the guf wasn't their focus, wasn't important to them. Gashmiut was not important in their lifetime. So what might be described over here in the Gemara is different types of deaths. You have deaths there of the Amoraim, great leaders of the Amoraim. When they had their death, you're right, it went easy. The neshama separated from the guf was actually like a ben chorin. They were freed from the guf. It was a celebration, their day of death, when they left. Whereas here we're talking about the normal experience of an individual who's attached to their goof and have had worldly pursuits. The neshama has a much harder time separating from the goof, and here it's described as being a very difficult process of the neshama leaving the goof. Alright, I think that would help explain the contrast or the difference between these two gemaras. Then the gemara now continues, Amar Rabbi Levi, Brachaita, and Niftar min Amet. When one leaves the mate, this is similarly brought at the end of the gemara in Brachot, which is Lo Yomar Lo Lech L'Shalom. When you depart from the mate, don't say Lech L'Shalom, Ela Lech B'Shalom, go in peace. And if time in a chai, someone leaves or departs, someone is alive, lo yomar lo lech bishalom. Don't say go bishalom in with peace. El lech lishalom, go in peace. So why is that? And if time in a mate, lo yomar lo lech lishalom. Don't say this. El lech bishalom shenemar, because it says about Avram Avinu when Brit Ben Amtarim, it says vata tavo levotecha bishalom, that you will pass away and go to your forefathers bishalom. So when you talk about the mate, you talk your proper way to depart from the mate is b'shalom. On the other hand, and if tamin achai lo yomar lo lech b'shalom, don't say that. Elo lech l'shalom shere David. Shomar le avshalom. When he says to avshalom lech b'shalom, halach v'nitle. He went and was now not literally. He was not hanged because he was. That's not how he met his death. But his hair got caught in the tree, and he was hanging by the tree, and then he was killed by that. So nitle itro shomar le Moshe. On the other hand, itro tells Moshe lech l'shalom. Halach v'itzliach. He goes ahead and he is successful. What is the difference between lech lishalom, lech bishalom? So I always favor the interpretation of the Marshal, which is brought down in Brachot, which is a beautiful idea. The word shalom means shleimut, with wholeness, completeness. So over here, when you talk about a mate has reached the end. There's nothing left for them to do. So what do you say? Lech bishleimut. Go with your wholeness. Go with whatever you have. All you have is what you're taking right now. So therefore it's lech bishalom. Although in a person who's alive, you say lech lishalom, go lishleimut. You should continue your path, you should continue to work towards reaching a shleimut, and therefore it's lishleimut, going to shleimut, rather than with shleimut. And that's why it's wrong to do it the other way. When you say to someone lech bishalom, you're basically telling them you're at your end. There's no more for you to do, you are shleim already. That's why you, when avshalom, it didn't work out so well. Whereas when you say to a live person lech lishalom, then you're telling them continue to work towards your goals of being a shalem. And that's the difference between lech bishleimut to lech lishleimut. Right now we end off with the last agadato of Masechet Moed Katan, which is Amar Rabbi Levi, another one from Rabbi Levi, that's why we bring it over here. Amar Rabbi Levi, kol hayotzei mibeit hakneset lebeit midrash. Anybody goes from the shul, davening, into the beit midrash, into learning, or mibeit midrash lebeit kneset, or from learning into the beit kneset. That's why we have the shear between the first minion and the third minion, so you could do either way. You could daven and then come and learn, or learn and then go daven. Either one of these is zoche mekabel pnei shechina. That person warrants to greet the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Shenemar, because the Pesuk says in Tehillim, yelchu michayel el chayu. You'll go from strength to strength. Yira'eh el elukim b'tzion. They will appear to God in Sion. So who is the one who appears to, who is able to appear to God in Sion? The one who goes from strength to strength. What's Chayel El Chayu? From shul, from davening to learning, or from learning to davening. You should know it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch La'alocha, that after one davens in the morning, they should try to learn. They should sit down for a second and learn. They should go to Beit Midrash for a second and learn. And even if they don't know how to learn, Yelchu, they should go there, get Schar Alicha. There's this idea of going from davening into learning before one starts out in their day. So it's very important to have a learning seder either before davening or after davening based on this, because this is the way that a person enters his day. This is the way that he starts his day. And that's why that person will say Kabul Pchei Shechina, because he starts his day off on the right note, davening and learning. That's the only way you can start your day. Amar Rav Chiya Barashi Amar Rav, Talmidei Chachamim Ein Lehem Menucha Afilu Olam Haba. Talmidei Chachamim don't even rest in the future. Shenemar, Yechul Mechayel El Chayel, they'll go from strength to strength. Yeh El Elukim Mitzion. Until they appear before God in Sion, which means that they will always, they have to go, whatever they did in this world, they have to continue doing in the next world until the Atid Lavo, when they finally will get their final rest. They won't be in rest until they reach that point, the final time, Yireh Elokim in Sion, until God appears in Sion, which is the Atid Lavo. That's finally when they have rest, in strength and strength. And with that, we complete Masechet Moed Katan. Hadran Alach, Velu Migalchim, Aslik Allah, Masechet Moed Katan.